Last month, the Somaliland Journal of African Studies, the SJAS, was launched with no Somali academics or researchers on the editorial and advisory boards. This raised a very necessary debate on the continued whiteness of academia and more specifically on the production of knowledge on and about Africa. This spurred a hashtag, which is hashtag Adan Studies, and it was launched by our guest, who we have joining on the line right now, is Safia Aidid, who is a PhD candidate in history at Harvard University. Hello, Safia.
Hi there.
How are you doing today?
Great. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today and for speaking to us about what in the past couple of months has become a really active online campaign. But it points to the very, historical and colonial roots of academia, and especially research and academia on and about Africa. So before we engage in this kind of more substantial discussions about the systemic racisms in academia, can you tell us a bit about the launch of this journal and why it prompted you to start the hashtag Adan Studies that sparked this debate?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, thanks for having me. So this came up when, as you mentioned in your introduction, the Somaliland Journal of African Studies, a new journal actually launched by graduate students based in London, did not have a single Somali editor, a single international advisory board member of Somali descent, not a single Somali writer, and claimed to have been founded in collaboration with the University of Hageisa, which is in northern Somalia or Somaliland. So it was really interesting for us to see that exclusion. And what I wanted to do is try and think about that more broadly, to link that to kind of this larger system of exclusion of Somali people from knowledge production about them. And so what I did was, and I was actually new to Twitter at the time, decided that this could be a great hashtag conversation, went to my Facebook page and posted this as a public post on my Facebook page, and then really announced this and said, tomorrow we're going to have this hashtag conversation. And then it was only then that one of the international advisory board members, a German anthropologist, actually jumped into the comments and made some patronizing remarks that really, I think, animated the discussion. It became the jumping off point that really proved the point of the critique initially.
And what were some of the, I mean, I guess the comments that people were saying? I don't know if we, I don't know if you really want to talk about what this, I shouldn't swear on air, but I mean, what were the, I mean, what he said, we don't have to talk about that, but what were people tweeting back around this? I mean, this is really interesting also in the way that social media works, right?
Right, absolutely. It resonated so well with people, not only to think about academic issues. You know, you'd have people tweet things like, you know, my professor said that the issue with British Somaliland was that it wasn't colonized enough. Other people talking about how hard it is to find books written by Somalis when they're doing research on papers on Somali history, culture, and politics. And it really also extended beyond just thinking about academic knowledge. People linked it to the media. You know, they would share articles. You know, for example, just the other day, Al Jazeera had a clip that was about explaining Al-Shabaab in 1 minute. And when they get to the death toll part, they just link foreign attacks by Al-Shabaab. Not a single mention of the largest victims of Al-Shabaab, which are Somali people. And then people just kind of also linked it to kind of development issues, NGOs. So it expanded even beyond thinking about academic knowledge, but to how we understand and talk about Somali people and how that itself has been incredibly racist and, you know, signifying other relationships of power.
And so the tweet that received the most attention in the Adan Studies hashtag was about British explorer Sir Richard Francis Burton, who wrote in his 1856 travelogue that it was an absurd Somali superstition that mosquitoes carried malaria. So ingrained in this is, of course, a preconceived notion of white rationality and objectiveness versus the irrational and emotional black subjects. So can you discuss this and also why, so I mean, this is so prevalent in the way that one mm-hmm. studies, or academia has studied, Somalia has studied Africa more generally. And so can you discuss why this tweet in particular you think resonated so well with people?
Mm-hmm. Well, one, I think it was a perfect parallel to some of the remarks of this anthropologist, this idea that, that you know, there's much ado about nothing, that Somalis are not rational enough or too partisan to be able to understand or participate in knowledge production. So that what this encounter showed, this historical encounter, is that idea of rationality, the idea of the European as the objective scientific observer, whereas Somali knowledge is just the realm of the superstitious, the fictitious, the non-existent. So that, I think, became a nice metaphor for thinking about kind of how Somalis are then excluded from knowledge production, how they're not taken seriously, how they're seen as partisan and emotional and superstitious. And it was also how some of the detractors from this Adan studies discussion have framed a lot of this, rather than seeing us as intervening in a productive way. You know, it's just these tweeting, you know, diasporic Somalis who are just emotional and not thinking and not being or engaging in an academic way. So it was also interesting to see that. Many people also pushing against social media as a useful, constructive tool of knowledge production and dissemination. And the idea that, you know, it has to be in this rational, very academic form, which is the academic journal. So if we have anything intelligent to say, we should be writing it. So all of these things are at play, I think, captured in that. And, you know, the explorer or the colonial anthropologist, those become useful, I think, archetypes for thinking about how these things have continued into the present.
And that's really, I mean, and it didn't even strike me at the time, such a great point mm-hmm. in that, you know, the way we write about knowledge is also a form mm-hmm. of production, like a form of producing knowledge, right? So that you right. wrote, that you chose to take to social media as opposed to a more kind mm-hmm. of conventional, traditional, quote unquote, academic avenue is also very interesting, right? I mean, you mm-hmm. are a PhD student, obviously, you know those avenues, but that this required a different form of communication mm-hmm. is also very interesting.
I think it democratizes knowledge production and engagement in a really interesting way. Actually, just yesterday, Somali students at SOAS, they wanted to disrupt the site, so they held it at SOAS, which is where the journal was actually started, and held it as a town hall rather than having, you know, kind of PhD student panelists or whatnot talking to a Somali audience. It became a town hall style discussion about Adan studies and knowledge production. So I think these types of ways, I think, challenge also the imposition of kind of these rational, very academic, very exclusive ways of talking and thinking about these things.
And so, of course, this kind of knowledge production, this kind of very academic, very white knowledge production, mm-hmm. Has its roots, right? And then we say academia yeah. is founded on colonial conceptions of knowledge. Can you explain what that means? And how are colonialism and academia and academic research closely and historically linked? I don't think people maybe mm-hmm. realize that history. And for example, with anthropology, you know, academic research is a part of the same imperial project.
Right. So anthropology is actually one of those disciplines that came out of colonialism. I mean, the idea was to collect information about, you know, so-called primitive societies and the natives, and then those would then be used, that information would then be used in the service of colonial rule. So SOAS, actually, just to bring that up again, is one of those schools that became a place where you could train people before they go into the field. They would learn the languages that they need to rule Africans, learn a little bit more about cultures. So all of these things are tied. And so the biggest critique of all this was that how Somali studies formed within that kind of colonial heritage did not quite decolonize in ways. And that's what we were seeing today. But even further than that, I mean, many of the categories, the disciplines themselves have roots in asserting European modernity. So the categories that we use of analysis, the tools that we use, even the language that we use to describe phenomena are tied into that moment. The rationality, the journal, the writing is more important than orality. All of these things come out of a specific European historical moment, and that same moment actually produced the forces of colonialism and subjugation.
And so we saw that in the 80s and the 90s, and still, we saw kind of a turn in academic studies that was dismantling these colonial conceptions of knowledge and history, and also using different languages, right? Like you kind of alluded to. And there was a movement of histories from below and decolonized research. Sorry. So how does this legacy of Somali studies fit into that history? And how is Adan Studies a departure, or the hashtag Adan Studies, or this kind of resistance that you guys are putting forth, a departure from these colonial forms of knowledge production?
So the main argument that many of us have been making is that those shifts that you're describing, for example, Talal Asad in the 60s and 70s wrote about this colonial heritage of anthropology. You would see people like Edward Said writing Orientalism, I believe, in 1978. Subaltern studies, you know, historians and other social scientists from South Asia talking back to the West and deconstructing all of these concepts. So we're trying to argue that Somali studies actually missed a lot of those key shifts within the social sciences. So what was at that time in the 70s, 80s, even 90s, a kind of a first wave of critique, Somali studies is only experiencing that now. So Adan Studies, I think, has revealed, and this is something that I argued in some of my writing, of, you know, a field in crisis, of still trapped within kind of this colonial mentality, colonial imaginary, and being introduced to critiques that were actually said in other contexts before. So in that sense, it's frustrating for some of us who are more familiar with some of these older critiques, but so important, I think, and we feel responsible for then bringing it to the field that we all belong to in a way, because we're engaged with Somali issues. So it's been interesting to see how all of this productive academic work can come from a hashtag, which I think also says a lot about the moment that we're in. Very different from the 70s. It's now Twitter that can generate change in academia.
And just so our listeners can maybe even follow the hashtag, can you give us, spell out the hashtag and also any other social media sites? I know there's a I don't know what the site, it's Storyboard, like there's a story, what is it called? Story It? Story Me?
Storify, yeah.
Storify. Yeah, website, so, is also, could you give us all that information so people can look that up?
Yeah, sure. So my Twitter is at Safia A, that's S-A-F-I-A-A. And so the hashtag is hashtag Adan, spelled with a C, C-A-D-A-A-N, studies, all in one word. So with that, you can follow many of the things going on. I post and retweet a number of things. The most recent piece of writing has been mine in the New Inquiry called The New Somali Studies. So we're trying to then jump off and think about the hashtag as a way of generating a new Somali studies and a new way of thinking about things. So I try and gesture at the futures and the possibilities of all of this in that article.
And all that information will also be up on our blog when we post this interview. So that is africanperspectives.tumblr.com. That's africanperspectives.tumblr.com, and we'll post your article and the hashtag and all of that as well. And I also wanted to mention, which I didn't in the beginning, that you're from Toronto, right?
I am from Toronto, an alumni of University of Toronto, proud graduate. And I'm in town. We're actually going to have a roundtable at York on May 2nd. I think that's at 10:45 a.m. And that's for the Critical Ethnic Studies Association Conference. So I will be flying in for that.
Okay. Can you maybe just one more? It's May 2nd at 10:45, and people are more than welcome to come. And it's on the York campus. Do you know which room?
I'm not sure, but it is free and open to the public. That's an exception the conference is making for us, since they think it's so important that other people and other voices participate in this.
Great. So, well, I'll look up the schedule, and I'll definitely get that on our blog as well.
Great.
And so just to kind of maybe round off the conversation, I think one of the kind of biggest tropes that exemplifies what we've been talking about is how academia is so easily classifies Somalia as a failed state. and that becomes an unquestionable kind of category, right? And so in other countries that maybe have had similar conflicts are never classified as a failed state. I mean, for example, the United States after their Civil War is never classified as a failed state, right? So that's, you know, the language of failed state is also historically rooted. Can you talk about that for a few minutes or a few seconds?
Yeah, and this goes back to the same question of the concept and analysis and the tools and language have been inherited from a specific moment. That is the idea of the nation state too is particular to Europe. So what we're seeing, I think, is, and certainly there was a collapse in the Somali region, that is the collapse of the nation state in the way that it's been theorized and, you know, Max Weber and whatnot. But other forms of governance have emerged in the aftermath of the collapse. You have Somaliland, for example, which I mentioned but did not talk about. Somaliland is a country within a country, a state within a state, declared independence in 1991, not recognized internationally, but is probably the most democratic state in the Horn of Africa, has its own elections, its own government. And there are many other Somali states within the former Somali Republic. And then, of course, there are other non-state mechanisms of governance. Clan itself is its own political unit. Somalis have their own traditional ways of governing that legal mechanisms that are very different. So I think what this moment also enables us to do is come up with the analytical language to describe all of these things. You know, we don't have to impose certain categories, certain imperative concepts. We can think about these things within their own groundedness and their own understanding. And then, and I think that's where theory becomes useful. A lot of this has been a divide between an old colonial idea that there's only one way of thinking about things, very empirical, it's what it is, but we want to theorize and open up new ways of speaking, new ways of understanding, and new forms of analysis.
Great, Sophia. Well, I'd really, really like to thank you for coming on the show today and speaking to us and having this discussion, and the time went by so quickly. I'll definitely get up all that information for folks, for listeners to follow up and to join us, to join you at York University on May 2nd for the CESA conference. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we let you go?
No, I hope to see you all there. It's great and it's productive, and I think it applies to many fields beyond, you know, the tiny subfield of Somali studies. So thank you so much for having me.
Great. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Sophia Aidid, who is a PhD candidate of history at Harvard University. And she started the hashtag Adan Studies in response to a journal that came out last month about Somalia that had not one Somali on its board of directors. And so it really did spark a conversation about the way knowledge is produced about Somalia, but also more generally, kind of the historical roots of academia.